Okay. Good evening and welcome. You see the second string team in here this evening. And it's Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock Pacific Daylight Time, is that, or whatever, whatever Pacific time it is. And so we are here to continue our discussion of the American Book of the Dead guidebook. And our fearless leader is out of town this week. So Tamara and Ivan are handling this evening. So and I know we've got Silverdale on the phone. Anyone else? No, okay. Well, we're going to continue this evening with the presentation on the first book of the dead called the Book of Lalah. And I was telling Tamara that I missed your presentation evening, and I was listening to that. I didn't get a chance to hear the whole thing, but I was quite interested in what I heard. I really appreciated this comment of Pat's about the word surprise, that she characterized her reaction to reading this aloud and having it read to her and so on was surprise, because that's what I feel that way about the second book that we've been working on in our smaller group. Because I have read this, book several times, maybe not as many times as the Red ABD, but I also have read it for someone years ago. Read actually entire passage. If we were reading this for someone who was passing, we would read an entire book at a sitting, or actually we did a vigil where we would read it for an hour, so you would read the book over and over again with a couple of minutes in between. You'd basically read it as many times as it would fit in an hour. Then we called that a vigil, you know, like doing a 24-hour vigil for someone who was passing. But we thought we would start out by reading aloud. Want to do that?
I mean, last week some of the things that we covered was how we initially approached the book. We looked at just how the book visually appeared to us, and you know there were comments about it had sort of a scriptural look, and then we talked about what words sort of jumped out at us, and then you know what was the taste of the book, and you know some of the words like Ivan mentioned were surprise or choice.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that we really didn't do was we didn't really give you the hearing of the book. It's a long book, so Ivan and I we're going to start with the help from Dan on verse 28. I really encourage you, if you have your book, to follow along with us. As you all know, Ivan is a poet, and we meet every Monday night in the ashram. And so many times you can read a text, and then when the breath is used to speak the words, a whole other dimension opens up. So we really wanted to give you that experience of hearing of the text. So Ivan, myself, and Dan, who is off camera, will be reading to you from verse 28 to the end.
Should I start?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your protocol, do we read the numbers?
Yes.
We usually read the numbers when we're doing this. 28. Now you are dying, and you must leave without that which you have in this life accumulated and brought to yourself.
29. You must leave your friends, family, home, and pleasant surroundings. You cannot take them with you, but with you, something shall survive.
30. You go not, neither do you come. You have been here always with us, even though the form has changed. Now you are seeing it as it is, but in reality, it has never changed.
31. We who are your friends, your relations, and your fellows on the path of reality are but the convergence of the five primal elements of consciousness.
32. And if it seems otherwise, it is but a dream. And if you recognize all that you shall see in their true form as the five primal components of consciousness, then you shall remain awake and be lifted up. But if you resist that which you shall see and believe in them, then you shall be cast down, and you shall sleep and be reborn into the world of matter.
33. Know that you are the luminous void itself, infinite and eternal. He that remembers that he is the luminous void shall be himself infinite and eternal, and he shall enter the kingdom.
34. But he that wanders in dreams, even for a moment, is like the small boat in an ocean of storms, and he shall be overcome by the waves and cast into the sea.
35. Now you are the clear light of pure, objective reality, and all perceptions are received directly, and there never was a material creation. And it is all pure spirit and always has been.
36. And your present consciousness is in reality unformed, and you are the void itself. And you have no qualities of form. And your real nature is the luminous void itself.
37. And you are the voidness of the void, the eternal and unborn, the uncreated, the never real, never unreal.
38. And all that you have been conscious of has been only the dream of the dreamer. And your own consciousness, that is the voidness of the void, is the endless endlessness of a pure and shining void without change and without existence. You are the voidness of pure spirit.
39. And your own consciousness is inseparable from the great body of luminous void. You are the unchanging light itself.
40. And you can expect no birth, no death, no existence, no change. And in the reality of pure spirit, there can be no birth, no death, no existence, and no change.
41. And you are the heart of spirit. Recognize the voidness of your own spirit. This, and this alone, is your true nature.
42. and this shall be read to the deceased at least 3 times, and as many as 7 times. And the reader shall sincerely read to him in good thoughts, and the reading shall continue until all hope of liberation in the clear light has vanished. And that shall be, let me give that to you again, and that he shall be awakened in the luminous void, and that he shall not pass through the apparitions of the second stage of transit.
Thank you. Isn't that beautiful? I mean, to me, it's such a powerful statement, and you can hear the resonance with the clear light prayer. You can also hear some of the resonance to how I raise myself from the dead, where it says, we who are your friends, your relations, and your fellows on the path of reality. So in all books, one of the things that our group noticed in all the different books of the ABD, the same threads of continuity are presented. But this is a very, for me, a very powerful statement.
Do you mean the same threads as in this text, or
well,
in
the
threads
in
that carry through the book?
Through the book, I mean, we, one of the things that happens on Sunday at 11 a.m. is a reading of this book. Ivan, you want to show your copy of the book?
Yeah, it's on camera.
Yeah, okay.
This is the paperback.
And then I have the hardback version, which it's beautiful. It's got different art prints by EJ. But every Sunday at 11 in the ashram, we have been reading this book. And throughout the book, like right now, we're working with the Sunday sermon.
Say, Ivan and Tamara, you know, I think we've lost the broadcast. You might want to reboot.
Okay, thank
particularly
you.
Particularly since this is so interesting.
Thanks, Silverdale. It seems to be still up on Dan's computer here.
Hello.
Who else is?
This is Kay.
Yay,
hi.
Kay.
Hey, Laura.
And I'm looking at you guys live. I don't see that it's dropped off.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll just have to refresh here.
Yeah, okay. You may need a reboot there, Silverdale.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, okay. So you are, what you're saying is you're progressing through the book. You've been reading the entire book.
Yes, we've been through the book, and there's definitely a... Yes, please.
Silverdale, please just press play pause or pause play first, and if that doesn't work, refresh the page.
Yeah, I've already refreshed it. I'm back online. Sorry about that.
Okay, you're back. Okay.
All right, good.
Melissa Lorca says, so rich and powerful. So that was her reaction to the text.
Yeah, I have a question for you, maybe for your group. Maybe you talked about this since I haven't listened to the entire recording of your presentation, but how would you describe the difference between this version of the instructions of Bardo Todol, the instructions, whatever, and the ABD, which is the much more, let's say, the more commonly used book for the Voyager instructions. Did you guys talk about the difference, about what is the character of this book that makes it different?
Well, I think we didn't really talk too much about it in the group, but I know I spoke with Patricia Elizabeth about it. You know, it seems like each of the different books has almost a different cultural flavor, to it. And she said, you know, of course, you know, are the first book, the book of Ula is related to the name of Allah. And so this book initially, I think, came out when there was a much stronger Sufi tonality to the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a way that some of the images remind me of reading Kabir or Rumi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the words are a little more flowery than, say, the red ABD.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, the book, you know, I've read the Book of Sacraments a couple times, and again, it has a different, you know, flavor. You know, so there's, it's almost like flavors.
Right.
But the content is still transmitted in whichever form.
Well, this one certainly seems to transmit very strongly. I mean, yeah, it's more maybe in line with being the, say, the model being Islamic texts or Sufi texts. It seems, you know, immediately seems more poetic, more metaphorical.
Yeah.
There's more. It seems to me there's more deliberately more analogy and poetic formulations than in the ABD. Although, for example, you know, in the ABD, there is the image of the moon reflected in a well, I think. Is it the moon?
The moon on the water.
Moon reflected in the water. I'm trying to remember if it's specifically a teacup or is it a well. No, it's just in the water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I mean, this is, and this image is in the book that we're going to be talking about in a week or two, in the second book in Uruk-Hai, that, you know, that same image is present. But it's in this formulation, in this book, I immediately thought of Rumi. Actually,
yeah.
I went and found a couple of examples of Rumi poems where the, you know, not only does it, is it a similar kind of poetic writing, but actually Rumi uses the same metaphor in the mirror. In the mirror that you're, how he characterizes it, that there is a process, or there is a moment, let's say, when you look in the mirror and you're seeing, you are a reflection of the face of God, and you're seeing the face of God. Actually, he's talking about, Rumi is talking about Shams, about his teacher, and saying that when he sees Shams, it's a reflection of he, Rumi, and that it's Rumi as God, and that when Shams looks in the mirror, he only sees God. The formulation is very similar to this book, yeah.
Well, that kind of goes to something I noticed is that in the two books, the ABD and this one, the different tenses are used. In the ABD, it's almost the whole thing is now I am experiencing.
Right.
Whereas this book, it shall come to pass, or... and you are the heart of spirit.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, let me make a comment about that, Dan, because I think that maybe Marvette, well, say with Patricia, if she were here, Patricia and I are sort of uniquely qualified to talk about this. The, you know, the editions, the red American Book of the Dead has gone through so many editions that it actually started out as readings to the Voyager that addressed in the Voyager in the second person. There were in the earlier versions, I have to go and find the actual books and see where the change was made, but at some point, EJ took the reading, he didn't otherwise change the readings, but he basically changed it from saying, you are now experiencing the clear light of objective reality, to saying, I am now experiencing the clear light of objective reality.
You know, I'm thinking that might have come about.
Well, it was after at least two or three editions of the Red Book,
mm-hmm.
You know, starting in 1974, 75, and I remember the, actually, you know, it was actually a bit of a shock for those of us, you know, like sitting around, we've been reading this book already for years, you know, I read this for my grandmother, and so on, and you know, and he said, and EJ said at the time, and again, I'm paraphrasing, you know, like my memory's not what it used to be. Nostalgia ain't what it used to be either, as Reb Zalman would say. But
or entropy.
Yeah, or entropy, what it used to be, right? Now, EJ, he explained to us that the reader who's reading to the Voyager, the reader is establishing an essential self link, an essence link to the Voyager. So there, at that point, there isn't a separation where the reader says, you, this, I something, and you something. It's saying, the reader is saying, now I am experiencing the clear light. And the Voyager
is
joined.
I am one, there is no other.
Yeah. The Voyager is in a unity. The Voyager is the same as the reader in those in that process. And, you know, the whole process of reading is the forging a link into that transit, what we earlier called transit state, you know, into the in-between state, into the bardo.
One of the things that I think this book does is, and Kay, you're online, so please jump in. Kay and I had the opportunity not only to work with the group working on the first book, but also to sit in several sessions with the second book, which is coming up. And one of the things that really struck me was that in the second book, it is Sur Rahman, the Compassionate. And I began realizing that each of the books almost are like an aspect or face of God. You know, maybe you can comment a little more on this, Ivan, but, you know, my understanding is that, like, the word Elohim speaks to one manifestation of Godness, whereas Abba speaks to another one. So it really felt like, even in the initial survey, was that you were encountering a particular manifestation of the face of the beloved, and it varied, and so that's why the naming, you know, this is the book, you know, of you know, Ur-Rahman is different in feeling than our first book, the book of Ula.
Yeah.
Do you have any sense about that, Kay?
Well, the thing that I have come to look at, I totally agree with everything you've said. The thing that I've noticed, though, that for some reason it took a long time to notice, that the face of the beloved is always the same and always there, but that over that face is continuously the play that occurs. And for me, that was, you know, whether it's the friendly guides or the unfriendly guides, behind that is the you know, the true beloved. And I don't know, it just was significant to me recently. It took a long time.
But what about this book here, though? Doesn't this book suggest to you the highest of the high?
Oh, you know, absolutely. Like,
you know, the 99, there are 99 names of God, let's say, in this tradition. I actually asked the Indian scholars that I'm working with, the women who are there around New Delhi, who have quite a background in Hindi and some of the Indian traditions, the Bhagavad Gita and so on. I asked them specifically whether that 99 names of God, whether it suggests a hierarchy, whether it's supposed to be hierarchical, because in fact the first of the 99 names is Allah or Allah. And it seemed to me that if it's something like where there's, you know, the emanation in Kabbalah, you know, from the highest of the high, there's the completely absolute, undifferentiated, ever unnameable, you know, in the Hebrew tradition, it's like you can't even say the name of God. You say all of these names and so on, and they're all like the lesser reflections or manifestations of the divine, because you can't actually say the name of God.
Well, we've
and,
spoke.
And, but, you know, anyway, so that's an open question that we may have something to say about that in a week or two, about whether there's, whether it's just facets, you know, all different facets of the divine, which is, for example, you know, EJ's the teaching, I think, which also comes from Kabbalah, is that Shekinah is, mm-hmm. is a manifestation of God. Shekinah is a female.
Well, if I may ask.
Please.
I just noticed that there are 22 books, and that is that not the same number of major arcana?
Yes.
And also, I believe the same number of pathways in the Tree of Life.
Yes. Oh, and that's interesting. Yes. That's good. I didn't know that parallel.
And the section that for me that Ivan's kind of pointing to is that on verse 4, he says, "I am Ula. I am He who exists by virtue of essence alone. It is said of me that everything is perishable except my faith. I have no other name than I am that I am." So, you know, there's a sense that this is a primal source.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But as Kay said, you know, it's you sense in each of the books, you really sense the beloved behind each of them. One of the things that did you want to say something, Kay?
That's exactly what I mean by what I came to. I haven't read that line since we went through the book, but yes.
You know, it also kind of reminds me of a little bit of the story of Krishna and the gopis, how, you know, Krishna could appear to each of the gopis in the form that was most desirous, to them. So there's a way that these different faces of the divine, you know, speak to, you know, we're not a unity. And so for one typicality, one face may be an easier approach. But one of the things that we were kind of mandated to do today was to maybe go back into a little more about how we worked with the text. You know, we were given the task of being sort of the explorers in approaching this text. So I wanted to, with Laura's and if Grant and Harry are on, please jump in. I wanted just to kind of review some of the ways that we worked with the text that may be of help. Because there was something about the working together in a group with our very different typicalities that allowed a real richness to emerge out of the text. Just review some of the questions that Patricia asked us to work with. The first one was we were given a certain number of passages that we were responsible for to read and then to work with. So how do you understand the passage as you have written it down? How do you understand the passage as you have read it? So, you know, really hearing it was very important. How do you understand the passage as you have said it aloud? How do you understand the passage as you have heard it read to you? So I'm really, you know, Ivan was sharing with me that one of the things that he does in his group, that they make a point of reading the book aloud before they begin to work as a group. That's a wonderful way, I think, to really not only to hear it, but also to share in the reading of it. How do you know about the passage that you have chosen? How do you know the passage or understand more about them or differently than you do now? And what other questions do you wish to ask yourself or another about the passages? So out of this work, we came to some very, practical exercises that came out of it. Also, there were ways that it linked to our experience of Scripture. I had shared last week that for me the word was shining, and that word had linked way back to my early childhood and hearing a hymn about the saints casting down the golden crown around the glass, the shining sea. Laura, you also had some very practical ways that you worked with this text.
Yes.
Would you comment a little bit on that?
Sure. I would even like to. I think it might be more helpful. I thought I would just read one of the ways that I, one or two of how I actually approached it through Patricia's questions. And so, like with verse 7, and it has been revealed to all men that unto each the power to die consciously has been given. But if he has not the will to grasp the absolute truth when it has been revealed to him, then he shall be born again into the six worlds of material existence. So, going with her questioning, which was easier for me to do, others had, there was a scholarly approach, I believe, by Grant. And so, anyway, the way that I approached it, understanding the passage, A, as I wrote it down, because I would write down the passage each time, I decided to write the key words that grabbed me as I read the passage. So here were the key words, and this helped me to kind of hone in on, the passage. One, revealed to all. Two, power to die consciously. Three, will. Four, grasp the absolute truth. Five, has been revealed. Six, shall be reborn again. Seven, into six worlds of material existence. And then B was, how do I understand the passage? And I did this with each verse. I followed this pattern. So everyone has, this is how I understood it, everyone has an equal chance upon death, but one must be awake. And then having practiced presence and attention, and realize, parentheses, withstand what is being shown, parentheses, absolute truth. If one doesn't get it, blacking out or falling asleep, they are born again into the six worlds of material existence. How do I understand the passage when it is said aloud? Being born in the six worlds of material existence is imminent if recognition does not come. D. How do you understand the passage as you have heard it read to you? Will, to me, is endurance, steadfastness, staying with something and not faltering into side paths, recognition. And the definition of will, the Old English, is determination, desire, purpose, wish, request, joy, pleasure, delight. E, how do you know about the passage that you have chosen? And so my answer was an inner knowingness. F, how can I know the passage or understand more about them or differently than I know now? And my answer, it seems to be a process. Each path is different, but once there, the view is the same for all. And the phrase, many are called but few are chosen, comes to mind, but in a different light than when I was young. All are called upon at their death of the body. What happens after that is a matter of having prior continual training and preparation. And then my answer also was, listen. So that's just to give you an idea of how I worked with each verse that I had was responsible for.
Now, Kate, did you also relate it to, you know, practical circumstances in your life? I know last week or week before last, Patricia talked about how that every time that she gets into a car, she recognizes that she's in transit, and so works with the teaching. Was there? Did you
well,
feel?
I think from us working with this chapter, it's almost like, and there's so many gaps, of course, during the day, and you know, but it comes to me more that I am dreaming, and that I am in a dream world, and I try to take a walk every day. In my neighborhood, there's a real pretty walk, and I find that during that time period, I do a lot of the exercises. I do the movements, try to do the movements as I walk through one section, and pretty much from the time I get up, I do the, certain phrases. I wish for this to be the benefit of all beings everywhere, and I thank you for being alive, and you know, just it seems like my whole day now is more geared towards that. And then also out in the public, I feel more somewhat relaxed with people. I had an experience today with a young man in a gallery. And he was the guard, and he said he never spends time with people, but we stood in front of this one picture, and it was of the devil and of an angel. And, you know, I just could not help but think of the teaching as we were standing there. I never really went into what I was into, but I felt like we had, you know, just through remembering, you know, what we are doing here, we had a very good exchange. So I try to use it all the time, as much as I can.
That's for me. I know last week I, you know, in working with the questions and trying to really get a hold of them, that the phrase that kept coming up for me during the weeks that we worked together was moving from person to presence, because when Kay was talking about the dreaming, I had verses 37, 38, and 39, and you are the voidness of the void, the eternal, the unborn, the uncreated, the never real, never unreal, and all that you have been conscious of has been a dream of the dreamer. So, you know, I've had, as Kay was saying, there's been a whole theme about, you know, the dream of the dreamer. And so all the things that I have tended to think of myself as, you know, my identity and family and friends, you know, the book is saying, you know, they're all just primal components of consciousness. And so how to practice that, how to be in the world but not of it, might be another, you know, reformulation that's similar to what you were saying, Kay, about, you know, how do you, you know, how to practice presence. The other thing for me that in the working together with this group, Harry, are you on? Is Harry?
Anyone else on the phone?
Or Grant?
Just Silverdale here. I don't think Harry made it tonight.
Not on tonight.
He hasn't made any comments and spoken up on the phone, of course.
Okay.
Oh, you can't call him.
Yeah, Grant says he can't call
okay.
him. Could I ask
yes,
a question?
Please.
This I'm very interested in what you're saying here because, let's say, if I were to do my best to impersonate David,
uh-huh.
you know, here and
I
might come up with the kind of thing I might be asking, like, you know, as to your that exercise of Pat's, what was the one is what is something that you would like to ask another or ask others about this passage? Is
mm-hmm.
that, was that one of the questions?
Yeah, here's the question that was
toward the end.
Yes, let's see. What other questions do you wish to ask yourself or another about the passages?
Okay, what other questions do I wish to ask myself or another? Okay, well, I have a question that I'd like to ask about several passages, but I'm looking at verse 35 in here. It says, "Now you are the clear light of pure objective reality, and all perceptions are received directly, and there never was a material creation, and it is all pure spirit and always has been." So this evidently is the describing, you know, being in a very, very much in an essence state. I mean, this is out of material, out of material existence. But I'm wondering, what does this mean to everybody? I'm hearing that Kay, Laura, is addressing this somewhat in her describing her walk there, which is to say, you know, this walk that you're taking through the material world, you're doing something there which is making it sound like a voyage. You know, that it's having other significance or other content to you as an experience, even though you may be walking the same passage, you may be walking the same path over and over again, but you're having different atmospheres or something different is happening on that path. But I'm saying, let's say, again, trying to think of what David would be asking here, what could this possibly mean to you, like, walking out of your house, or even, say, Patricia, getting into the car, going to the store, or going to work, or something like that. What are we anywhere remotely near, and there never was a material creation, and it is all pure spirit and always has been? What would that, I'm asking, what is the content of that? What would that be like if we were actually in this place here in our everyday life? Is there any convergence? Is there any overlap of that place?
Well, yes, and if I may, the thing of it is by setting that same pattern every day, and I do go through, I do voyage, oddly enough. I mean, it's just trees and squirrels and sky and, you know, occasional people, but it's a voyage. Every day is a different voyage through there. So what it oddly has done, it has spilled over now into when I, you know, I walk out of the house, let's say. I pass through that doorway, and, you know, there's the doorway exercise. I use that. I pass through that doorway, and when I go out just on a regular, you know, going to the grocery, or like today, going to the gallery, it has created, that walk has created, that's now going with me as I journey in my daily whatever else I'm doing. It's starting to, I'll put it that way.
I guess how I sort of take your question, Ivan, is in a very different direction in that I understand it as frequency. In that, you know, light exists at one frequency, and then at a slower rate, it, you know, becomes sound, and then another, a slower rate, you know, it becomes matter. So it gets very difficult to say, what's real, what's on, because it just seems like we're along this whole continuum. So that's kind of how I understand it.
Well, let me try this then. Is there a moment of your day when you actually can identify with it is all pure spirit and always has been? There isn't a material creation.
I can't say that during every day, but
not every day, but,
but
not all day, every day. Anyway.
Yeah, but I would say that there have been moments, of that, where there's no longer subject and object.
Mm-hmm.
So that's more, my experience, where there's the unity. Now, going back to sort of your question about, what would you want to ask others, George, you're still on the phone. One of the questions I had in reading this was about the five primal components of consciousness, or the five modules of consciousness. Do you have any background on that?
Tamara, I don't. At all. Of course, when I first read this, I was confused as well. What I've gradually formulated for myself is that these five primal elements of consciousness are our five senses. So each sense vibrates at a different frequency, and then through maybe an act of magic, we are able to combine it all together and create our historical personality, and thereby miss an opportunity to develop our essential self. So Pat may suggest something entirely different, but that's how I read it for myself.
That was something that I really felt like I needed to learn a lot more about, because about the five primal components of consciousness. That's mentioned over and over in the red ABD and here, and I guess I don't really understand that. I mean, certainly there's this, the hand of God, I've heard, so I'm thinking, okay, well, there's some kind of reference to that, but maybe that could be something that during the next explorations, we can go into that,
It would be worth looking into. I mean, I have the idea. Again, I wouldn't have the time right now. I would need to go very carefully through the Red Book, the American Book of the Dead. But my understanding is that the skandhas are represented in the Voyager instructions as guides. In other words, that the components of consciousness arise in a fixed order, one after another, which is to say, as either friendly guides, unfriendly guides, that the skandhas are part of the series of chambers that you voyage through. And so they're, but I'm not sure which, as elements of consciousness, I'm not sure whether they're named as such, or whether they're named as guides, or whether they're named as atmosphere, they're colors, emotions, radiations, and so on. So
well, I know
have to
talk,
go and check
I,
into that.
I know in the Angel Healing Guide it talks a little bit about sensations and perceptions and cognitions, but I don't know if that's the same thing. I also, what I'm sort of hearing while we're talking about this question is David, I think he's quoted Wittgenstein, the question comes up, why does there seem to be something rather than nothing, is really kind of brought up.
That's sort of related to the question that I'm asking, which is to say,
that's what I said.
If you were sitting in essence, if you were in this place, which is where you're reading the Book of Olah, or it's being read to you, what would you be experiencing as opposed to this material reality? I wonder if anybody else has any answers to that question, which is to say, maybe an easier way to put it is, what is your experience of this state of that everything is pure spirit?
Well, Ivan, if I can just offer the framework I've constructed based on my understanding of Gurdjieff's ideas. So just to simplify and sum up more or less the totality of Gurdjieff's ideas. One, we are comprised of three diametrically opposite forces that are heterogeneous. Sadly, we only develop one of these forces over the course of our lifetime, namely our historical personality. This first force develops in a boy up until the age of 11, and then it stops developing. It just becomes a repetition, and for girls, up to the age of 9, as it turns out. And then at this point is when, at those ages, 11 for a boy, and actually I think it's 7 for a girl, not 9. I'm sorry, 7 for a girl. That's when the second force begins, when great nature makes the second force available to us for our development, and that we call essence. And so if we were instructed from those particular ages, 7 for a girl, 11 for a boy, about how to make essence an active second force, which balances out our historical personality, then by the time we get, by the time a man reaches the age of 20, this is according to Gurdjieff, or a woman reaches the age of 13, then they can begin to intentionally develop the third force of independent individuality. Now, the reason that I think this is important is because what EJ is doing here is he is instructing our essence, which already exists. I mean, it's in potentia, and it's in a latent state, and the question is how do we develop our awareness of essence and allow its participation in our own trinity. And these books, American Book of the Dead and this guidebook, ask us to imagine the state as though it already existed. So initially we deceive ourselves, but gradually we come to believe it, and then we actually begin to experience it because we've developed it. Anyway, sorry for the long-winded explanation, but
the second force, which is the essence, the essential self.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Because that's what I know that I think EJ's often characterize it as the when people as adults have awakening experiences, the difficulty they find is that the essence is in an infantile state. It has not been around here. It doesn't. The essence doesn't know what to do with this alleged material world, you know, with the historical personality or the material world or whatever, you know, the resisting force. Whatever.
And by the way, Ivan, you know, it actually becomes a two-step process. Not only do you have to learn how, not only do you have to awaken your essence, that is, awaken your awareness of your essence and its relationship and participation in you. But you also have to be able to educate your historical personality to understand why this is a good aim to have, and then how to pacify our ordinary consciousness, these five primal elemental elements of consciousness, in order to, let's put it this way, they have to be brought into equilibrium, and then they have to be tuned in such a way that it automatically activates our essence. And in this way, it becomes like one hand washing the other. Our ordinary consciousness is used to educate and develop, facilitate the possibility of our essence developing organically. So,
bringing the woman to life.
Yeah, it looks like Dan. Have some comments there to share with
you. Yeah, what have you got, Dan?
Well, this is from earlier, and I didn't mean to neglect these. Shelley Boyce said regarding the reading, for me, this reading, eyes closed, created the vibration of comfort and knowing. And Vidara said, I am another you.
Hmm.
Or, as they used to say on the playground, it takes one to know one.
Yeah.
Any other comments?
Not yet.
Well, we're getting close to the end of the time. Are there There is one thing that I wanted to share. I had the opportunity to study briefly with Rabbi Zalman, who was a teacher and friend to the school. And he had a Jewish mystery school, and I had the great luck of being the only non-Jewish person to attend, and it was quite powerful experience. And one of the first things that I encountered was when I spoke last time about the rabbinical approach was I was raised, Christian, and there was tended to be only a very literal interpretation of scripture. So if it said, God created, the world in 7 days, that was seven, days, 24 hours on the clock. And it was very limiting, for me. In attending the mystery school, he taught a different style, that there are different approaches to a scriptural text. And by working in the group, we had these different typicalities. The first level, which it was like a surface, and maybe Ivan can help me with the name. A shop?
It doesn't matter. They're Hebrew names. So.
Okay. But the first is, it's the literal level. When you look at the text, look at what's it saying, straight off. Then the next level, Remez, is this idea that there are hints that maybe not everything is contained in the text, but there's hints that you work to develop. There may be allegorical, such as, say, the parables or the Beatitudes would be in existence. There's a symbolic meaning that goes beyond the literal sense. The next one is Durash, which is to inquire or to seek. And what you do is you pull in other texts. Like we brought in the ABD, we brought in Joy of Sacrifice, we made reference to other texts. So that was a thing that was really brought to bear on this first book. And then the last one, Sod, which is secret or a mystery, it's almost what is the revelation that's given to you. So I'm just going to suggest this was a really nice way for us to look at covering all those layers. Had we looked at the literal, practical meaning, had we pulled in our reference, material, what were the hints or practical exercises, and then what was the deeper mystical meaning? So that wraps up for tonight. I'm wondering if you would do some kind of a closing for us, Ivan.
Okay. This book of Halah. I think we probably can continue next week, actually, with another session on this book and some of these issues when David is back, because he may want to raise some other questions.
Yes.
And also, I'm going to miss next week, so I would like to be here when we do the presentation for our book. I should be on camera here with Michelle and maybe Molly. Jana. All right. I'm just gonna close with the last verse of Halah 42. And we'll see you all next week. Thank you for attending.
Yes, thank you for being here
and
the real
you,
people will be back.
42. And this shall be read to the deceased at least 3 times, and as many as 7 times, and the reader shall sincerely read to him in good thoughts. And the reading shall continue until all hope of liberation in the clear light has vanished, and that he shall be awakened in the luminous void, and that he shall not pass through the apparitions of the second stage of transit.
Thank you, Ivan. And may you all remember that you are the heart of spirit. Good night. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Ivan and Tamara.
Thank you all. Thank you.
Yeah, just remember for this entire week that there's no material world, never has been one, never will be one. So don't worry about anything. It's time to stop worrying.
All right.
Okay, good night. And
good
then
night,
let me see if I can figure out how we stop this recording. Hold on.
I'm sorry, what?